Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hi, this is Billie Jean King.
This is Marion Bartoli.
I'm Mats Wilander.
This is Mary Carrillo.
This is Pam Shriver.
This is Yannick Noah, and you're listening to the Tennis Podcast.
Well, it's 11:58 p.m., which means for once I can truthfully say it is still day 7 of the Australian Open 2024. And you find us in Melbourne Park. In fact, more specifically, where you find us is the spot, the almost X marks the spot where I watched the 2017 men's final between Roger Federer and Rafael Nadal on the big screen.
I did not know that.
Happy, happy memories.
That's amazing.
Was your view of the screen better than the one we've got now?
It was slightly better, but I would call it obstructed view. I would expect, had I purchased those tickets, I would expect them to be discounted heavily. But it was still an incredible experience, of course. Right now, there is still a bit of tennis still going on, but... of course, that hasn't stopped the food and drinks vendors from closing. We are right now, I think, in a closed champagne bar.
Yes.
Which feels like a terrible waste. I feel like we should, if we're going to record in champagne bars in the future, let's try and make them be open.
Mm. We don't seem to be out without drinks, though.
No, we've run into a few lovely listeners this evening, and one of them insisted on buying us a drink and did so with a flourish. I've got 5 gin and tonics in front of me. So let's see how this show's going to go. It has been... Do you know what? A couple of hours ago, well, a bit more than a couple of hours ago, I was thinking this is going to be... Do you remember that podcast we did where it was called... The title was "The Day Was Rubbish, But the Podcast's Still Really Good," or something slightly more flowery than that.
A dud of a day, but the pod's great, honest.
Right, that. I thought we were going to have to...
Not many people listen to that show.
I thought we were going to have to recycle that title again and slightly remodel it. But then some things started happening, and in particular one very big thing, the loss... of the top seed in the women's draw, Iga Świątek, to 19-year-old Czech Linda Noskova. Yes, one of the very many Czech teenagers that just seem to come off the production line fully formed and ready to take on the world's best and maybe even become the world's best. She lost the first set, did Noskova. Iga Świątek seemed to be entirely comfortable, and then she wasn't. And Linda Noskova took over, and it felt like quite a familiar, although not a familiar opponent at all. A lot of people listening will not know Linda Noskova one bit. It felt like quite a familiar story for Iga Świątek. What did you think, David?
Yeah, I'm going to rely on you both to explain to me how it was won and lost in many ways, because I don't feel like, because I didn't commentate on the match and I didn't see the whole thing, I don't feel like I've got a handle on it in quite the way that you will have. But the feeling I got, the bits that I saw, the look on her face, and the way in which Noskova just seemed completely unshackled by it. You know, she was just ready to show us what she got, and she got proper firepower. And yes, if you just there, even without me knowing that the detail of the match yet, it all adds up. It all lines up with the history that we've got of Iga Świątek losing big matches against big hitters.
Yeah, I think it's familiar in terms of the style of opponent. But I would say that it feels pretty shocking to me that this has happened like this early in the tournament. Like we haven't seen Iga Świątek get beaten by a sort of non-top player like this. Like, I know she's lost to big hitters, but they've been Rybakina and they've been Ostapenko. You know, these are Grand Slam champions. Linda Noskova is, you know, maybe, who knows, maybe a future Grand Slam champion, but isn't at the moment. And there was this strange feeling on the Rod Laver Arena that it really did take until about halfway through the final set for there to feel like an upset was on the cards. Like, otherwise it was like, okay, this is a bit of a tough match for Iga Świątek, but we've just seen her win a impossibly tough match. Like, she's going to be all right. She's going to come through this. And as you said, she was totally in control in that first set, playing really well, I thought. And it took a surge, you know, to use that word, from Noskova right at the end of the second set just to change the momentum of the match. She won 11 of the last 12 points of that second set, 10 in a row at one stage. And honestly, I don't think Iga Świątek did a whole lot wrong at the end of that second set. It was taken from her, from just clean, flat hitting from Noskova in a way that we have seen other players do to Świątek, as you say. So that did feel a little bit familiar. But even at that stage, there was this sense in the stadium that the sort of feeling in the stadium didn't match the genuine jeopardy that Iga Świątek was facing in the match. It didn't feel like a big upset night, and yet it became one.
Yeah, and I think some of that is to do with the demeanour of Linda Noskova, right? When you think of teenager upsetting top seed, you imagine the exuberance of youth. You imagine someone in your face and energetic. Ben Shelton, Coco Gauff, Mira Andreeva, they're all different varieties of that, but they're all hype, right? And Linda Noskova is absolutely not hype at all. She is... Look, there are exceptions, of course, but there are typically Czech tennis traits, aren't there? And she is right out of the stereotype of those. Not all Czech players meet them. There are plenty of examples of ones that don't. But in terms of the stereotype, the never too high, never too low, incredibly calm demeanor, the slow heartbeat that you often describe, David, she's right there in the sweet spot of that. And I think it lulled people into a false sense of security with Iga Świątek. As Matt said, it didn't feel like there was a crackle in the atmosphere until there really, really was a crackle. It was like a ping alert suddenly went around the stadium. It was like, oh, okay, this might be happening now. And for me, the two sets that Świątek lost felt quite different, actually. I feel like set two, she really didn't do anything wrong to lose that set. It was a Noskova surge. I mean, she just started making everything. Those languid, easy power ground strokes. She's not quite as tall and rangy as Rybakina, but the stroke production reminded me of Rybakina. Set number three, it wasn't horrible from Świątek, but I do think there was a minor crumble on the forehand. I feel like the forehand broke down from Iga Świątek, and I felt like she didn't trust it. And it made me think of the previous match against Danielle Collins, when my co-commentators on that, Chanda Rubin and Andrea Petkovic, that were courtside, were just picking... It wasn't something that particularly hurt her in that match, but they were picking up on the fact that she hits way more backhands than most top players would, even players with great backhands, just because of the way... We discussed it on the pod, didn't we? Just because of the way the court opens up to you when you hit a forehand, particularly an aggressive sort of mid-court forehand, compared to a backhand. It doesn't matter how good your backhand is, there are certain situations in which you just need to be hitting forehands, and she was favouring the backhand in those situations. And in that deciding set, particularly from the midpoint of that deciding set, I mean, there were a couple of points where she was running around forehand returns to hit backhands. And I must confess here that I was watching the match with Pam Shriver, who was... Not all these takes are entirely organically mine. I was helped along the way. But it's one of those things that as soon as it gets pointed out to you by somebody that actually knows what they're talking about, you're like, oh, so obvious. and it did... I don't think it was... the story of the match isn't, oh, Świątek didn't have a forehand. But when things got tight, the forehand did fail her.
It's a pretty big moment then, really, because you're expecting the forehand to be the shot that just takes over the match for her. Was this a question, do you feel, Matt, of Noskova darting into it and it breaking down in that way?
There was some of that for sure, like some of these errors, you know, she was a little bit rushed on the ball and maybe tried to go for a little too much in that situation. I mean, she was occasionally doing an incredible job of crouching down and absorbing a lot of the Noskova pace. I was very, very impressed with that. I was sitting next to cameraman Matthew, and you know, we were talking about Radwanska, the way, you know, she used to crouch down. There was, you know, there was a lot of good from Świątek tonight, but it's the forehand unforced errors that just piled up and started. It started leaking, that shot towards the end. It really, really did. And I don't know. I just don't know what to make of it, because, you know, said the other night, I felt like the Collins win coming through a tight match like that against a big hitter could be, I think I used the words, career defining. And then in the very next round, she's come unstuck against a sort of similar type player. And it just felt like Noskova didn't go off in the way that Collins went off in the very final stages of that match. Mm. And Noskova didn't. I think exactly as you said, Catherine, that temperament she's got maybe makes her actually a good candidate for an upset, because it didn't feel like the moment was too much for her. It didn't feel like the opponent she was playing was sort of affecting her. It was just a quiet, smooth confidence that she had. She kept hitting her shots, and it drew a lot of errors from Iga Świątek. And it was, yeah, I don't know. I feel like the other day I thought Świątek had made a huge leap against these type of opponents, because she dug her way through that. And then tonight we saw the way that these sorts of opponents can still hurt and still beat Iga Świątek. It's fascinating.
And she's come into the press conference and said she's felt stressed all tournament.
Which is the total opposite of what she'd been saying in the pre-tournament press conference. She was saying that I felt really stressed in the US Open,
yeah,
and that I felt stressed,
and that
here,
stressed
last,
here
year,
last year. Because,
but this time was different.
It was her first time coming into a season as the world number one, and I do believe it felt different. I do believe this off season has been different. I think the whole you know, more peaceful off season thing, I don't think that was a lie, but.
It's confusing, isn't
it? It's confusing. Yeah.
I'm surprised to hear that, really. And listen, I kind of loved how she was getting pushed in those first two rounds, but I didn't think she would then come unstuck as a result of it or off the back of it. And if anything, I thought it would make her more match tight. I do think those are three rounds that are proper tests, challenges, threats.
Cumulatively, it's a lot, isn't it?
This stuff can happen. And listen, Noskova, you know how there are some players that we monitor and we're waiting to see if they have the breakout win? I'm still waiting for it with Clara Towson, for instance.
Oh, I think you're going to be waiting a while.
And I may well be. But would any of us have said that anytime soon we feel that Linda Noskova is going to break through? I wouldn't have done. I don't know about you.
No, I feel like we were thinking about her more a year ago
than we are now,
because she reached the final in somewhere.
Well, yeah, she came into this event last year, like, watch out for her.
Yeah.
And then she ended up in qualifying.
She had to play qualifying. There was a bit of discussion at the time about bit cruel that they didn't give her a wild card, because it wasn't. It was Adelaide. Was it Adelaide 1?
Of course it was.
I think that's why I'm confused. I think it was an event with a number in the title. She reached the final.
You're saying it wasn't the Gippsland?
And then a lot of people expected off the back of that run, and due to the quickness of the turnaround, she would be given a wildcard into the main draw. She wasn't, and she lost in the first round of qualifying. And that was kind of a bit, because had she come through qualifying or been given a wildcard, she absolutely would have been a name that we were waiting to see come out of the draw. Your
dangerous
archetypal
floater.
Dangerous floater, exactly. And then she didn't have a terrible year last year. Her ranking steadily rose, but she didn't have any breakout moments that forced her to the forefront of our minds. So yeah, we have stopped talking about her. And I also think there's a little bit of sort of brilliant young Czech female fatigue. There's so many of them, and they're so good. And
half of them are called Linda.
It's not fair. It's absolutely not fair. But I do think that exists.
But I sort of look at the Czech players a little bit how I look at the French players in the men's tour. You've got a big group of them. They're all good. But are any of them standout? Obviously, Petra Kvitova was. But really, you know, if you look through a lot of the players, they were good players. They were pushing.
Wimbledon champ.
Okay.
But French Open finalist.
But you know what I mean.
Yes.
I mean, look, Jo Wilfried-Tsong was a finalist. Gael Monfils got to a semi-final. They didn't have a... We always compare it to Britain, who don't have many players, but had a Wimbledon champion and multiple Grand Slam champion. France haven't. Czech Republic have had, yes, Vondrosova. They've had Kvitova a couple of times. But if you consider just how many players they've got, they haven't had that many big, big titles, really, between them. And I just wonder whether Noshkova might be the sort that shoots out from the pack and can do more than that. Look, Vondrosova, I absolutely take that point. But she's still inexplicable.
Always will be.
Always will be, yeah.
I don't know. I don't know whether I see this as this is Linda Noskova
breakout.
Like, breakout. I don't know. I just think that, obviously, it's a breakout result, absolutely. Like, it's the biggest moment of her career. But I don't know whether she's going to be part of the conversation now. It felt very match-up specific, to be honest. Like, she has a game that can hurt Iga Świątek.
Świątek has a problem with these types of players. I think that's a categorical diagnosis now. It's not just a theory. And it probably has been for a while, but... I think she has a problem. I still believe, this is not a controversial thing to say, she's the world number one. She's going to continue to be the world number one. I think her middle, her whatever's between a floor and a ceiling, her room, her bedroom, her living room, is better than anybody. But I think there are players with a top gear that is higher than hers.
I think on a hard court.
On a hard court, yeah.
Yeah, I think on clay, Iga Świątek's got a level
that is... It's a
different
story. Yeah, totally.
And I do think Świątek's dominance of Roland Garros and dominance... And like the little streaks that she's put together, you know, I think that's all created a picture of this sort of dominant player and the fact that she was number one for so long. But actually, like, you know, at the hard court slams, you know, she did brilliantly to win that US Open, of course. But she hasn't dominated the hard court slams in anywhere near the same way as she has on the clay. And, yeah, she's vulnerable against a certain type of player. But it still takes a great performance to beat her. Like, Noskova was brilliant tonight. Mm. And she only just won. Like, I don't think it's sort of panic stations for Iga Świątek.
No, and to be fair, in her press conference, it wasn't that either. She's really, really trying to do the process, not outcome thing, to think about the... She said... She talked about the fact that she'd, you know, made some tweaks to her game in the off-season, and she needed to remind herself that she's doing the right things, and that's still the right thing to do, regardless of results and all of that. It's not sexy stuff, but it's the sort of stuff that keeps you sane as a tennis player and makes you better, and it's... You know, it's the sort of stuff that it's good to hear.
Are we guilty of overrating her? Given
the world number one?
Yes. Given what I mean is, look, you can be a world number one, and Caroline Wozniacki was a world number one. Anna Ivanovic was a world number one. Yelena Janković was a world number one. She's better than all of those, right? She's clearly better than all of those, but I certainly feel like I have her as the favourite every time she takes to the court, pretty much, at these tournaments. She lost here last year. She's lost here this year. She lost at Wimbledon. She lost at the US Open. And I think I had her winning all of those titles. So am I unfairly thinking that she is just head and shoulders the best player? I think the evidence is mounting that I am.
That the head and shoulders is the debatable bit there.
She's been the best player for the last 2 years. She has. I mean,
I'm not doubting that. But I would say, and I think when we had Pam on at the French Open a year and a half ago or something, we were talking in terms of Monica Seles or... You know, one of the great players who is set to dominate the sport and is that good. And I just wonder whether maybe we're being a bit almost unfair to expect
young.
That.
She's four slams at 22.
That's really good.
It's really good.
That's really good. But I think, as I said, there is something in there in that three of those are the French Open. Mm. I think her dominance at Roland Garros has maybe seeped into our overall view of her. Like, it's a different story at Roland Garros. She's not dominant at the slams elsewhere.
Imagine a world in which she hadn't won that US Open. How would we... That's an interesting counterfactual in terms of how we'd be talking about her. Would we at this point be talking... Would the discussion be, can she do it anywhere other than clay? It could be, right? It would be, is this just a great clay courter that's good on hard courts?
A bit like we talk about Naomi Osaka as a great hard courter who can't play on the others.
But she did win the US Open.
Exactly.
So...
yeah, and she is very good on hard courts, you know, through the season.
Mm.
You know, she wins a lot of titles on hard courts. It's just that, I don't know... She's finding it hard at the slams right now, and part of it is so many good players
who are looking to peak at the same time.
Yeah,
which makes it absolutely tantalising every time as a result.
Yeah, and speaking of tantalising, okay.
Sorry, just like one final point. Like, she's definitely the closest we've had to a dominant player. Like. Since sort of Serena's dominance, like I know Ash Barty in a sort of period won three slams at, you know, three different surfaces. She was sort of more adept on the different surfaces overall, I would say, but she never dominated in the way that Świątek has in terms of weeks at number one, in terms of those crushing Monica Seles-esque scores that she puts up all the time. Like, I don't think it's a lie that she has at times been a very dominant player. It just hasn't quite translated to hard court slam wins, I would say.
I wonder how she does that. I mean, I don't have the answers. I'm just fascinated by it.
I think she'll win here one day. I do.
Yeah, I do.
Wimbledon, if I had to say one way or another, I'd probably just about say yes. But I'm less convinced. I'm pretty sure she'll win here one day.
And look, part of it is draws. Like, you know, if she You know, there's plenty of players who do hit big flat shots, but there's plenty of players who don't. And if she can avoid them a little bit, you know, like she played Ons Jabeur in that US Open final, that's a better matchup for her. I know she played Sabalenka in the semis, but Sabalenka's got a semi-final problem. It sort of it sort of evened itself out. Świątek's problem versus Sabalenka's. Like, I feel pretty confident that Iga Świątek will win an Australian Open. I do.
How devastating for her to lose on the same day that Ostapenko went out of the draw.
Right.
Yes, because there is one of the big threats gone.
Yeah.
Rybakina had gone.
I mean, the big threats, David, are falling by the wayside. Let me tell you about the top half of the women's draw. Linda Noskova will play Elina Svitolina in the fourth round. Victoria Azarenka, who downed Elena Ostapenko today for the second time in 2 weeks, she will play Diana Stremska, qualifier. Jasmine Paolini, in the words of Hannah, how did she put it, Matt?
She's gone from being a good draw to having a good draw.
Jasmine Paolini will play Anna Kalinskaya for a place in the Australian Open quarterfinals. And Zheng Qinwen will face Ocean Dodin. That is the top half of the women's draw.
And what I love about it is, as much as that draw has been decimated in terms of top seeds, there's still so many great stories there. There's still so many people I want to watch play against one another and see how they handle the moment. I mean, imagine that, Noskova against Svitolina, two players completely at opposite ends of their careers and trajectories and experiences, and yet I care about them both. And I can't wait to see them play each other.
Svitolina beat Golubic tonight. Bad moment for the backhand list. Which, I mean, the number of submissions that we're getting about the backhand list at the moment. I mean, Noskova came up mid-match.
Kalinskaya.
Mid-match, Pam was submitting Noskova for the backhand list. Kalinskaya's, I mean, sort of every player's getting thrown your way.
Any move for the needle here, Matt, or not?
I might have to assess Golubic. She's on notice.
She's your only single-hander.
Third round of a slam is quite a good result.
It is, actually.
For her. So it for is. Her to be put on notice after that is,
she
I'd
is,
say,
but,
tough.
You know, as you said, other backhands are doing
other backhands
even better
are,
things.
They're doing things. I mean, Victoria Azarenka, sort of legacy
backhand list for sure.
And maybe current backhand list.
Maybe.
Golubic is punching above her weight for a while, isn't she?
Yeah.
Yeah, Victoria Azarenka getting rid of Yelena Ostapenko. I mean, matchups are just... I just love how matchups are everything in tennis. Ostapenko, and this is not my stat, this is, I think, your stat, Matt, from Twitter, or maybe Hannah's. It's either Hannah's or Matt's, but Yelena Ostapenko is 9-0 against opponents that aren't Victoria Azarenka this evening, and she's 0-2 this year. Sorry, I've had a gin and tonic and a half, guys. 9-0 against opponents that aren't Victoria Azarenka this year, and 0-2 against Azarenka this year.
Amazing. It was fun to watch that match.
I thought it was going to be the most fun, and I had moderate levels of fun.
There was a lot of passive aggressive stuff going on because Ostapenko, in the words of the summariser I was commentating with, Ken Skupski, was deliberately shuffling her feet every time Azarenka threw the ball into the air in order to make them squeak.
She went into the shoe shop and said, "Give me the squeakiest ones."
And it was, I mean, on radio, it was hilarious. You know, I'd say, Azarenka's about to serve, and then you go, squeak, squeak, squeak. And you just...
But it didn't bother Azarenka at all. She served out of a tree today.
I was blown away by how well Azarenka served.
Has she ever served that well? Did she serve that well when she won two titles here?
Yelena, can you come to my other matches and do that noise?
I mean, honestly, possibly not. Like, it was incredible serving today.
And in that final game, when Ostapenko was threatening the break back, I think she had three break points, and Azarenka hit aces on two of them. It was awesome.
Yeah, I mean...
And the rest of her game was really good as well.
I watched every point of this, and I I came out thinking I really need to be able to answer the question on the podcast tonight of why can't Yelena Ostapenko, even Yelena Ostapenko in incredible form, why can't she beat Victoria Azarenko? And I still don't really know, because I don't feel like there was some tactical cheat code or game style mismatch. I just felt like Yelena Ostapenko doesn't play very well against Victoria Azarenko, and Azarenko plays really well against Yelena Ostapenko.
Yeah, Pam's theory was quite interesting, wasn't it? That when you get a, you know, a champion like Azarenko, a competitor like Azarenko, when she comes up against someone like Ostapenko who's trying to disrupt, just sharpens your focus a little bit. And we do sometimes see Azarenko go off in matches, or, you know, sometimes her forehand can break down. And it just seems that she's, I don't know, she's penis in a squibble. She's locked in when she plays Yelena Ostapenko.
She's locked like, in she's when she plays in Australia.
Absolutely.
She's one of those players that plays better against somebody who winds her up.
Yeah, exactly. That's what Pam's saying, I think.
It's definitely the case.
Mm. So, Azarenka will face Yastremska, who beat Emma Navarro today. So that's a qualifier through to the fourth round. Paolini plays Kalinskaya. Zheng Qinwen is probably the other big story in the women's side from today. She beat countrywoman Wang Yifan in the first match of the day on the Rod Laver Arena, deciding set tiebreak. And I was worried for her in that deciding set tiebreak because they're such contrasting players. Wang Yifan just does not miss. I mean, a nightmare opponent as far as I'm concerned. And I think a kind of nightmare opponent for a big hitter, a risk taker in a tight situation, because she's just going to keep asking that question. And I was really worried for her, and I'm so impressed that she survived that test in the circumstances. And she did go off for a period of this match, and she does go off. I do think that's potentially a worry against the very best players, but when she's on, and she's increasingly on, she's steadily increasing the frequency of her onness and the gaps between her onness, and decreasing the gaps between her onness, she's unreal. The hitting, the spin on her forehand, and the heaviness. I'm not sure anybody else in the women's game is hitting the forehand like that, and I include Iga Swiatek. It just looks different to me. It's massive ball. And there were scenes after the match, weren't there, when Li Na, in just the most epic Li Na fashion, gate crashed Zheng Qinwen mid-interview and surprised her. And actually, at the time that I watched this video for the first time on Twitter or whatever it was, I didn't realise that they'd never met before. I just kind of assumed that they, like, of course they've met. Zheng Qinwen has been talked about for so long as this great Chinese talent, and Li Na is the flag bearer for Chinese tennis. Like, they must be hanging out all the time, or at least, you know, WhatsApping all the time. They'd never met. So I went back and watched it again and got even more emotional about it.
Sounds lovely.
Knowing that. Yeah, and look, anything can happen in this women's draw. But if Zheng Qinwen does continue this run and Li Na is here, that could be, you know, this is the Grand Slam of Asia Pacific, isn't it? That could be quite a special thing.
Oh, No question about it. I've been encouraged by Zheng Qinwen probably for the last 3 or 4 months. Just feels like she's figured out how to harness that game a little more and stop it malfunctioning to a degree where it just completely goes off the rails. And I feel like over the year or so before that, I'd seen a lot of that. Yes, power. Yes, sort of potential, but actually not packaged in a way that can win titles and successive matches. Doesn't feel like that anymore.
Who do we think is going to reach the final from this for Miss Top Half. Noskova, Svitolina, Azarenka, Yastremska, Paolini, Kalinskaya, Zheng Qinwen, and Duda. I mean, it.
I'm going Svitolina.
I can see why. I would go Azarenka. But it's interesting that we're both going experience,
yeah. Right? Yeah. It's such a, like, the weight of the chance that is there for everyone. You feel like a bit of experience.
11 years since Azarenka last won it. Amazing to think.
I think I would just go Azarenka as well. But wow. Like, there's, as you said, like, okay, I'm slightly sad about some of the matches we're not going to see here. But storyline-wise, there's still some absolutely brilliant ones from that top half.
Imagine if good draw Jasmine Paolini reached the final.
I would love it.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design and thoughtful construction, and free shipping, and that extends to their outdoor collection. Their outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry foam cushions. For Memorial Day, get 15% off your Burrow purchase at burrow.com/acast, and up to 25% off outdoor. That's up to 25% off outdoor furniture at burrow.com/acast.
Hello, Tennis Podcast listeners. David here. Now, you might know that I love a bit of cooking, and I think I'm quite good at it. But if I'm honest, even I get fed up trying to work out what to do every night. That's where Home Chef comes in. Being able to put together a delicious meal without the long prep and the cook times, well, that's pretty cool. Home Chef provides fresh ingredients and chef-designed recipes conveniently delivered to your doorstep to simplify your cooking experience. They have over 30 options a week and serve a variety of dietary needs, so you don't have to worry about what to make ahead of time. Not only is it convenient, but it's economical too. Home Chef customers save an average of $86 per month on groceries. Now, for a limited time, Home Chef is offering Tennis Podcast listeners 18 free meals plus free dessert for life and, of course, free shipping on your very first box. Go to homechef.com/tennis. That's homechef.com/tennis for 18 free meals and free dessert for life. You heard it right.
Right, we're going to move on to the men's results for the day. And, David, you need to... You need to prepare yourself. So I'm going to give you a moment by telling everybody about On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider.
Sorry, I was drinking my beer.
We are proud to be sponsored by On Location, the premium hospitality and experience provider throughout the Australian Open. And as you have been hearing, for the first time in history, official Paris 2024 travel packages from On Location are available online, making it easy for you to enjoy the thrill of the Olympic Games and the wonder of Paris like never before. Your Olympic Games adventure comes with guaranteed tickets to the sports events of your choice and accommodation in Paris, plus world-class hospitality and options for custom tours and activities to immerse you in French culture, food, shopping and more. On Location's wide range of official travel packages has been created to suit every need, from shorter stays such as the Discover 2024 package to longer ones like the Explore 2024 package. All include guaranteed tickets to sports events categories A to D and come with multiple possibilities for add-on services and elevated hospitality options. Just go to tours4tennis.com/podcast, tours4tennis.com/podcast, and select Olympic Games Hospitality to see what they have to offer. Packages can be purchased online, or a dedicated On Location team member can contact you directly to create your perfect package. And of course, the link to check them out is available in our show notes and our newsletter. Do you know, I didn't mention Olympics once during my commentary today.
That's impressive.
Mm. Very restrained, isn't he? Right, on to the men's draw. And there were no major upsets, but one.
Oh, do we have to?
Grigor Dimitrov, the 13th seed, lost out in four sets to a bloke whose name Matt and I have debated how to pronounce for much of this evening because we honestly don't quite know.
I commentated on it.
Okay, please tell us, who is this guy?
Nuno.
We were okay with Nuno.
I believe it's Nuno Borges.
Borges, yes. Okay. Tell us about Nuno Borges.
69 in the world, 26 years of age, from Portugal, which is a country that's always fascinated me in the realms of tennis. I used to attend a Champions Tour event every year about 15 to 20 years ago in Valdelobo in Portugal. And they had this really passionate press that followed them everywhere and attended the event. And they were super knowledgeable. All the journalists were good players. I lost love to several of them. And I remember asking them, why don't you have more players and more significant players? You've got this beautiful weather, incredible climate. You've got clay courts everywhere. Everybody seems to love tennis. Where are your players? And honestly, they were struggling to come up with any answers. And if you do look in the history of the sport, there really aren't many players from Portugal. And I think it's a terrible shame. And this chap is, well, like I say, 26. I think he's not had the greatest time just recently. I know he had a couple of bad losses early on in this year. And then suddenly he's gone and taken it to Grigor Dimitrov. On paper, that is a terrible, terrible loss for Grigor, who came into this tournament in as good a place as you could imagine. And he won the first set on a tiebreak. And then the next thing I know, and I didn't watch sets two and three, the next thing you know, he's lost them both handily. Borges, I think, just held it together incredibly well. Solid player, not spectacular. It's a bad loss, but it's also a great win. You know, it's one of those.
Yes, yeah, the sort of loss that Dimitrov didn't have last season. I don't think he lost to a player outside the top 50 last season. He was winning these matches repeatedly, and I don't know, it doesn't feel like a coincidence that it's happened at the first occasion where suddenly he's coming in with form, he's being talked about again.
Too many Dimitrov data points to talk about coincidence, I think.
Mm.
That's fair. I mean,
oh, it's just tough, isn't it?
Just a sigh.
Yeah.
He was 5-2 up in the fourth set. Dimitrov looked like he was going to take it to a fifth. The atmosphere on the Kia Arena, I mean, I was watching it on mute on the Rod Laver Arena on my laptop while I was watching Świątek in person. And the atmosphere looked amazing. You know, so many Bulgarian flags. And you felt like, okay, he's had his wobble. He's getting back on track. And then his game just went off and he played a very, very tight tiebreak in that fourth set. Got himself to set point, double faulted, and then missed the backhand long and then missed the backhand in the net. And as you said, Borges is super solid from the baseline and hitting to a really good length and, you know, forcing Dimitrov, I suppose, to get a little bit tight. And he did. And, oh, look, I don't know whether it's what you would call like a massive opportunity loss, like Medvedev is waiting in the next round. Like, it's quite likely that he would have gone out in the next round, but you just want to see him give himself that chance, really, in the form he's been in.
I did not see that coming.
No, I didn't.
Mm. I did not have him in the quarterfinals because of Medvedev, but you just can't fail to get to Medvedev in the form he's in and with the draw he'd got. And I'm afraid he did fail.
Borges against Medvedev is what we'll have in a couple of days' time. Medvedev beat Felix Auger-Aliassime very handily indeed. And he needed that, didn't he? He needed this to be a pretty straightforward win after what he went through a couple of nights ago. He was asked about that in his on-court interview. He said, "I'm not feeling fresh now. I'm not feeling 100%. At least I have this super ability. I can sleep where I want, whenever I want. Daniil is my people."
You were relating to that.
He said he went to bed at 7 a.m. and got up at 12 after his second round. Hit for 45 minutes. And then...
ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it really does mess up the body. I mean, he's done incredibly well to get himself in some sort of physical condition and mental condition to play this match as well as he has. And I've spoken to a lot of coaches who've said how difficult it makes it for you. And I even remember when we were covering the US Open in England during the pandemic, when we would go to bed sometimes at around 5-6. We had that one night last year, and eat breakfast before going to bed. And it really messes you up. It's not good for you.
It's like jet lag, isn't it? It's a very weird thing when you're eating eggs at a time of day when eggs are not a meal. So he did a wink at the camera, didn't he, after he won. We liked it. So Medvedev, Borges, Zverev, Norrie, David.
Tell us about
new Norrie, or the Noz dog.
Okay,
is that what Aussies are doing?
I think
we should
try to move past that bit because that was the only dark spot on the day. Look, Cameron Norrie is a player I've been pretty unsparing about on this podcast when he has a bad day. When he is bad, he is the worst player in the top 50. He is capable of 500 in the world tennis when he has a bad day, and worse. And he's a very good player a lot of the rest of the time, who's just done himself proud. I mean, he's an admirable competitor and character, and I have the utmost respect for him. But never, ever did I expect that I would see a performance from him like I saw today. I was not looking forward, really. In the framing of being a tennis commentator at a Grand Slam tournament, I love all of it, right? But within that framework, I was not particularly looking forward to commentating on Cameron Norrie against Casper Ruud. That was going to be rally after rally, all the same, probably last for about 3.5 hours, no great drama, and Casper Ruud would probably win relatively handily, as he has the two previous times that they've played each other. That's what I'm expecting. And I really had no reason to believe anything else. I did not get that in any shape or form.
What did you get?
I got Cameron Norrie net rushing. I got Cameron Norrie reminding me of 1991 Jimmy Connors. The way, I mean, there are certain similarities.
Blimey, David.
There are certain similarities.
Literally the reason David is sitting here today.
Yeah, I was so pumped. That there are certain similarities about the game of
Cameron
Norrie.
Cameron Norrie relived incoming.
There are certain similarities about the game of Norrie and Connors anyway, in the way they hit their backhands, both left-handers, neither one with a massive serve, and both of them sort of hit their backhand almost with underspin, you know, and they faded away, and it's flat as a pancake, really. The difference is the forehand. Connors' forehand was also almost underspun as well, whereas Norrie's got a big whipped forehand. And obviously, look, Connors was a way better player in every way, really. But when he got into his late 30s, he went from being a baseliner to being a sudden out-of-the-blue net rusher. And he wasn't known as a serve and volleyer, he wasn't known as a great volleyer, but he used it and he just put pressure on, and he just picked his moment, and it was such a rush to watch him using this against guys much younger than him. And Norrie did that to Ruud, because a bit like how Andy Murray knew he couldn't rally with Rafael Nadal back in the mid-2000s when he took him on that Australian Open, he had to hit through him, remember that time? This was Norrie realising, I can't beat this guy at my normal game. And so he played a completely different one. He played a game. You know, John McEnroe says, my game used to be, don't give them the same ball twice. That's what Norrie was doing. He would bunt one down the line. He would rush in. He would suddenly play a drop shot out of nowhere. I was about to commentate on what he's about to do, and he would do something completely different and that I've never seen him do before. He rushed the net more than 50 times in the match.
Wow.
He led the, I think it was the second set, he led the second set tiebreak 6-4, and then he hit a backhand on the line, missed it by a whisker, and lost the set, and went 3-2 down with a break in the third. And he still came back, and he won the match, and he won it with room to spare. He was absolutely brilliant.
Biggest Grand Slam win of his career, that, and against a guy he'd never beaten before.
Yeah, I mean, that's how it felt to me. I mean, Russell pointed out, my colleague, that he's obviously been to the semi-finals of Wimbledon.
I mean, in terms of ranking.
Yeah, yeah, in terms of ranking, and he felt like the underdog. He played this swashbuckling tennis. It felt to me like the best win of his career, the best performance of his career. I absolutely loved watching him.
He's got to play someone next that he's also never beaten before, never taken his set off. Alexander Zverev, does he have a chance?
Yeah, he has a chance. I mean, I think it's much more difficult because he was trolling the Casper Ruud backhand. He was so tactically astute. And the problem is, against Zverev, what he was doing to Ruud with a left-handed forehand that loops into the backhand side, that's just going into the sweet spot of Zverev, who's got one of the best backhands in the world. So he's going to have to find, I think, a Casper Ruud-type strategy.
The mirror.
Yes.
Do what you were doing to Ruud's backhand to Zverev's forehand.
Yeah, he's going to have to find a way tactically to beat him because I think game-wise, it's a bad matchup.
Artur Kazul has backed up his big Runa win. The French wildcard through to round 16. He'll face Hubert Hurkacz next. The big Hurkacz-Kazul round 4 match that nobody saw coming. Certainly not me. I predicted that Ugo and Bear would beat Hubert Hurkacz today. Thanks to my brother Math for being a big Ugo and Bear guy and tempting me in the wrong direction. I am 0-7 in the predictions. So do subscribe to the newsletter if you want to track that humiliation.
And Catherine goes, I've actually been trying and making sensible picks. I might have to turn it into a bit.
Yeah, like I haven't reached bit stage yet, but we're approaching it.
Neither did Reggie.
I have to say, Kazul has been one of the stories of the first week, I think. This is an incredible run to the fourth round. He is fun. And I said it the other day, and I'll say it again. I can't think of anyone maximising their serve like he is. Like, he is... He's not a tall guy. I mean, he is tall, but compared to other big tennis players, he's not in the, you know, he's not like Zverev. He's not over 6'5". He's, you know, he's about 6'1". He didn't face a break point today. He's hitting
against
Griekspoor. He's hitting huge serves, a lot of aces, and the rest of his game is good too. Like, he's a shot maker. He's fun. And court three was on today. Perfect court for him. They packed it out. There were, you know, all the people that were at the Manorino match yesterday,
I think had come over to this. The French support.
They're having a moment this week, France.
It's quite a big thing, isn't it? I mean, I do not think of Australia as a place where there are many French people. Maybe they've flown over for it, and maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like French support has been a big feature of my first week. I've heard Le Marseillaise twice.
Have we had a great deal of French success for a while? I don't feel like we have. I remember Joe Wilfried Tsonga reaching the final, but yeah, going back 15 years, Amélie Mauresmo won the title. And look, there was good support when that was happening. But it does feel like it's a long time since we had this.
Yeah.
Artur Kazul's changing it all.
If Artur Kazul wins the Australian Open, I will sing the Marseillaise.
Who would you take over Kazul and Dodin?
Most likely to win it.
If you had to choose one now.
I mean, I can't believe I'm saying this, but I think it would probably be Dodin. Just because of who's left in the draw.
And because best of three.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can have a hot streak for two out of three. Can you do it for three out of five against...
I would take Kazul.
I got quoted on some sort of Australian news thing today. Please don't quote me as Ocean Dolan's going to win the Australian Open. That is not what I'm saying.
There is somebody on a sort of overnight news desk in Australia that's being sort of forced to churn out
clickbait
news stories, and they're listening to Matt on the tennis podcast.
What's Matt said tonight?
Yeah.
Have we got any lines there?
There's this tournament. It's called Wimbledon. There's my headline. Okay, other fourth round match that's been set up today. Carlos Alcaraz beat Jerry Shang via retirement. Not a lot to say here. We had another child with leg strapping walk out onto Rod Laver Arena. And I winced as he did. I also smiled as Jerry Shang walked out, because despite the fact that he was facing an uphill task, even if he had been fit, but he clearly wasn't. And even despite that, he still walked down that tunnel onto Rod Laver Arena with such a pleasing little smirk on his face. I loved it. I think he's going to be a star. I think he's got a lot of potential to be a cool feature of men's tennis for years to come, but wasn't fit to compete today against Carlos Alcaraz. Alcaraz threw to face Miomir Kecmanovic, who beat Tommy Paul in a five-setter. I didn't see much of the first four sets of this, but I watched all of the fifth set, which was thoroughly bizarre, because Tommy Paul, who famously comes out on top of every fitness metric in the sport, was not there. I mean, I thought he was sort of having an out-of-body experience in that fifth set. He was... it wasn't just the fact that he was physically not there. There were balls he wasn't running for, and it was an incredibly long and physical match. I just thought he was up to a match that long and physical. But it wasn't just the physical exertion. He was misjudging leaves on volleys. You know, his head was elsewhere during that fifth set. It was a really bizarre watch.
It was as bad as it gets, really, that fifth set. I mean, I think his head was probably still caught up in the two match points he'd had at the end of the fourth set, and he blew a backhand on one of them, he blew a forehand on the other. Like, you know, the chances were there. He then lost that fourth set, did what I thought was the right thing, went off court, took a break, and I'm going to do my daily mention of my conversation with Matt Futterman here, and I said to him, can he do this? Can Tommy Paul do this? And he was like probably, because as you said, he comes out on top of all those USTA tests that they do. He's a fit guy. You back him in the fifth set, and his head was just gone. I mean, he was all over the place. He
so weird.
Smashed his racket. He was five love down in that fifth set. He'd won 3 points in that fifth set. Like, it was just easy for Kecmanovic.
He was playing like he did in that US Open doubles match where it turned out he was drunk. I'm not suggesting anything happened in the bathroom break between the fourth and fifth sets, but it was thoroughly bizarre. Look, Kecmanovic is a really good player.
That's the thing. Like, until that point, you know, I didn't have eyes on this match all the way through. There was just so much going on. But the rallies I saw, I really enjoyed. You know, similar sorts of players, big hitting from the baseline. And Kecmanovic, I was really impressed with him at the Davis Cup finals last year. And by all accounts, he wasn't first choice, really, to be Serbia's number two at the Davis Cup finals. You know, they were going to go with Laszlo Djera. But Kecmanovic put himself into contention with how well he was practicing. And, you know, he made himself sort of unavoidable to be picked. And he played brilliantly, and he's carried that form over. Played a brilliant match with Jack Draper, didn't he, 10 days ago or so? Which obviously he lost, but, you know, really good high level. And he's carried on this good form. And I thought Tommy Paul would be a dangerous possible opponent for Alcaraz, given he's beaten him a couple of times. Like, I know both of those wins were in Canada, could be a sort of condition sort of thing. But he shows up against Alcaraz, does Tommy Paul. But then I remembered that Ketsmanovic and Alcaraz had that crazily good match in Miami last year. 7-6 in the third. Like, he's dangerous, Ketsmanovic.
He is one of the best ball strikers, ground stroke-wise, in the game.
It's ping-pong stuff, isn't
it? It's awesome.
It's Karatsev, like, where's Karatsev?
Or Nalbandian, like. There is something. Well,
wasn't he coached by Nalbandian?
Mm. Yeah, there's something really special about that ball strike. And I think it really showed up when he played that match against Draper, who was sort of heaving the ball at him. And actually, when Ketsmanovic caught the ball, he was in charge of the rallies.
Mm. Yeah. So, look, I think. It was tough to judge Alcaraz today, wasn't it? Just because his opponent was so compromised, but he seemed a bit better. He's like his own strike of the ball seemed a little better, and he's going to need that because Ketsmanovic is dangerous.
Yeah, absolutely. No shortcuts. It's one of those, isn't it? Tomorrow's schedule: Magdalena Freck opens up on Rod Laver Arena against Coco Gauff. Novak Djokovic has the day session tomorrow. Or should I say, Adrian Mannarino has the day session tomorrow against Novak Djokovic. Tequila-fueled Adrian Mannarino. And then there is just one singles match in the night session and a doubles match. It is an Aussie sensation-tastic evening on Rod Laver Arena. Alex de Minaur against Andre Rublev. And then it is Olivia Gadecki and Mark Polmans in mixed doubles sensation action second up. The second court is some legends doubles first up. Moving on to the singles. Wasn't expecting to see. I'm not prepared for legends to be happening yet. It's still week.
We need to be further into week two by then for that.
Yeah, just thoroughly unprepared for that. That can't process it just yet. The first singles match of the day on the second court is not before 1 p.m. and it's Amanda Anisimova and Aryna Sabalenka. Matt's doing the face.
Cannot wait.
What Matt's day centres around tomorrow. And then not before 4 p.m. Jannik Sinner and Karen Khachanov. Then there's some women's doubles. Gabby Dorovsky and Ellen Routcliffe in action there. John Kane Arena starts with doubles as well. Then Taylor Fritz and Stefanos Tsitsipas, followed by Mira Andreeva against Barbora Krejcikova. That's the match that I'll be commentating on tomorrow, and I can't wait. Kostyuk Timofeeva is on the Kia Arena tomorrow, and that's it for singles. It's suddenly that stage of the tournament where it dries up. Business end is here. Legends time has arrived. None of us were prepared for it.
And the juniors got, there was a lot of juniors today, wasn't there? And I saw Jagger Davenport, Lindsay Davenport's son, won, which is cool.
Wow, okay.
I did not know Jagger Davenport was a player. Mm. That's fascinating.
It's a lot of pressure being called Jagger, isn't it? Like, you can't. You can't
and
work.
And your mum's Lindsay Davenport.
You can't work in IT.
You're always good at the names, Catherine.
That's your lot for day 7 at the Australian Open. Our Australian Open mascot is Usher. Hello, Usher. Thank you for being our mascot throughout this incredible and mind-boggling fortnight, as it is turning out to be. David has Francis. I've got Darwin. We've already established Darwin, how things are going. And Matt has Haider and Soma. Billie Jean is sponsored by Billie Jean King and Alana Kloss, who are both in town and were at Kooyong today, which was lovely stuff to see on Instagram. We have top folks and executive producers, and they are Greg, Chris, Jamie and Jeff. And Matt, we have shout-outs.
We do. And I should just say that Jagger's actually called Jagger Leach, but I've called him Jagger Davenport for the sake of recognising
the Jagger bit is what people are remembering.
Go by a single name.
Yeah. We start shout-outs today with Elspeth Dal from Sheffield.
Ooh.
Elspeth's such a sort of classy name, isn't it? It's such a Downton Abbey name.
Yes, I think our first ever Elspeth.
Well, we've had Elspeth before.
Well,
Because Elspeth says, for my shout out last year, there was much discussion about whether Elspeth is the Scottish version of Elizabeth.
Oh, yes, I remember
Matt
this.
Theorised that it was, but then immediately began to doubt himself. I've been waiting all year to tell Matt that he was right. Though I'm not actually Scottish.
There's an Elspeth character in Three Men and a Little Lady.
Yes, there is. Yes, Catherine.
Absolute banger of a film, that.
Correct.
Haven't watched it recently, might not have aged well, don't know. There's always a risk with films from that era.
I watched Three Men and a Baby with my kids.
How did that
recently.
Go?
I had to turn it off after quite a short amount of time because certain things that were okay to say then are not okay to say now.
So disappointing, but unsurprising. Sorry, Elspeth, for mentioning a potentially now cancelled film with your shout-out. But it's a great name, and we thank you very much.
We have Eve Passaltina.
Hi, Eve.
Hello, Eve.
Who lives in Montana.
Wow.
Helena is the capital of Montana. That's a thing that I know.
That's good knowledge.
I went through a, like, Americana stage as a young teenager, a young nerdy teenager, and I memorized every US president in order, along with dates of when they were president, and every state and capital.
Good party trick.
Some
glad I know you now.
Matt, you are on fire this week.
I thought I was safe. I thought I was in safe fellow nerd territory,
nerd too,
and
yeah,
I feel
but,
so exposed.
You are safe, Catherine. It's just you, Matt, me, and tens of thousands.
So judged. But you...
I did that with Wimbledon finalists.
Don't know when Calvin Coolidge was president of the US?
No, I don't. No. When was it?
Oh, God, I picked the wrong one. 1910s, sometimes. You didn't know that Helena was the capital of Montana. Get in the bin, Matt.
I mean, I actually, seriously, I'm very impressed that you know all
Thanks,
that.
Thanks, David.
Yeah, you know.
Should I tell Eve's story, or is...
Please do.
Is that redundant now? Eve says, I'm such a fan of the pod that as an actress and audiobook narrator, when I first met a wonderful new producer at Macmillan Publishing, Guy Oldfield, as soon as I discovered he had come from the BBC, one of the first things I wanted to know was, did he know David? He did!
No.
And my night was made. Which... You know, I loved that. Sounds like maybe you don't know Guy Oldfield, though.
It's awkward now, isn't it?
1923 to 1929, Calvin Coolidge.
Okay.
Pretty good.
So you were
Are you annoyed that you got it wrong?
20 years
No,
out.
I'm annoyed at you for...
Outing.
For judging me. I'm sad for young Catherine.
Young Catherine was cool, I think.
No.
And current Catherine's cool.
No. Anyway, we're ruining Eve's shout-out further. Hello, Eve. Like Eve from The Traitors, Series 2.
That's Eve, isn't it?
Eve. Give him a beer.
Saint Laurent.
Muirhead.
I've interviewed Eve Muirhead.
How did that go?
She's lovely, yeah. She's a Scottish curler. Mm. Thank you, Eve.
One of the greats.
Absolutely. Mm. Olympic gold medalist.
And finally, we have Marjorie Graven.
Oh.
Right, Marjorie.
I've got a great aunt called Marjorie. My great aunt Marjorie.
Marjorie on the Eras Tour set list.
Oh.
Are there any Marjories from the world of tennis? I am struggling. I've got a feeling that Alana Kloss is just sitting there listening to this now and saying, Marjorie!
Oh, no, I'm thinking of Mallory. Mola Mallory.
Yeah. There's definitely a Marjorie
out
there.
Do we know anything about Marjorie?
Yes. Grew up in Amsterdam, currently lives in Singapore.
Wow.
Where she is the president of a women's tennis league.
Go, wow. Marjorie!
Love that.
Good work.
I've been to Singapore, but not to Amsterdam.
I've been to Amsterdam, but not to Singapore.
Oh.
I've been to both.
Look how that worked out.
It's time to wrap this up.
Yep.
Thank you for listening. Thank you to Phil that brought us the gin and tonics that Adrian Manarino style fueled this podcast. We'll be back tomorrow with one more. Sleep well, enjoy your day, whatever time it is. We'll speak to you then.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.